So now Sanjay continues what's happening to Arjuna. We'll listen to that today, and then next week we'll do the Lord's teaching. Tamu vacha Rishikeshah. Prahasanniva Bharata.
Prahasanniva Bharata.
Sena yorubhayor madhye.
Sena yorubhayor madhye.
Vishidantamidam vachah.
Vishidantamidam vachah.
So tam to that warrior who was Tushnim Babuva. He was dejected, he was in shock, he was depressed, he couldn't move, he couldn't think. So to such a person, Rishikesha. Rishikesha means the Lord of the senses. Prahasanniva, as if smiling. You say, why is Krishna smiling, you know, in such a sorrowful situation? So he is not outwardly smiling as to tease him or to make fun of him, but inside there is a little smile, and I'll talk about that. Eva, as if smiling. Prahasan means to laugh. Prahasan means to smile. Prahasan eva Bharata. To Bharata, to Arjuna, Krishna spoke. Where? Senayor ubhayor madhye. Between the two armies. So the two armies we also face all the time, and that is the conflict between good and evil. In us, there are two armies. One is the army of the evil and one is the army of the good. Generally, the army of the evil has more soldiers, has more, you know, what do you call it, more arguments why I should do the wrong thing. The side of the good is always weaker. And how can the good triumph if the Lord is with us? So that's why they say, carry the Lord with you at all times, remember him or her, chant the name and use the mantra to constantly remember the Lord. So this, between the two armies, Vishidantam, and he was depressed. Vishidantam means extremely sorrowful. Idam vachah. So these words Krishna spoke to Arjuna between the two armies as if smiling. So now let us see what we mean by smiling. Why would Krishna smile? So he says smiling, he's not teasing or he's not mocking. Like say I have given, you know, my friend or my spouse, you know, this particular, you know, little equipment, and he doesn't know how to operate. He turns it around, he's pressing the wrong buttons, and say, come on, let me show you, you know. So you are kind of, you know, inside you're smiling. Look at such a simple thing and he can't do it. So you take it and say, come on, let me show you. So similarly, this, he says, it's such a simple thing. But he's not understanding, so he's inside smiling. And I'll talk about, if I have time, I'll talk about Krishna avatar. What we mean by smiling. If not, we'll do it in some other verse. Because Gurudev has written a very beautiful commentary about Krishna smiling. So if we have time, I'll cover that. And senayor ubhayor madhye, and staying between the two armies, we already talked about Vishidantam idam vachah. So these words he spoke to this depressed soldier. Now the chariot between the two armies is in the Kathopanishad. Gurudev mentions that in his commentary. In Kathopanishad it is covered in a great amount of detail. And the chariot is very symbolic. It is symbol of us, because this body is my chariot. So body is my chariot. So, and who am I? I am Arjuna. I am the ego. I am the jiva, the individuality, who is riding the chariot of this body. And who is driving my chariot? First of all, who is pulling the chariot? The five horses. See, the five horses. So the five horses represent sense organs, eyes, ears, nose, skin and tongue. And they are going out into the world of objects. So my eyes want to see, my ears want to hear, my nose wants to smell, touch, taste. So these five senses are pulling me out into the world of objects. And that's why I want to see, I want to hear, I want to smell, I want to taste, I want to touch. And the jiva gets caught because the individuality, because he lets his senses control him instead of his mind and intellect. So the senses are pulling Arjuna. Now what is controlling the senses are the reins, and the reins represent the mind. Because ultimately the senses are controlled by the mind, right? The mind decides what I should see, what I should hear, what I should see, smell, taste, touch. But if I do not use my mind wisely, so the reins are not controlling the horse, but the horse is controlling the chariot and deciding where to go, then the chariot will go in five different directions and become a, you know, accident. So similarly, when my mind is under letting the senses control, I shouldn't eat this, but I eat. I shouldn't speak this, but I speak. I shouldn't do this, but I do it. So what am I doing? I'm letting the horses control the mind instead of the mind controlling the horses. So the reins represent the mind. And now who is controlling the reins? The Lord himself, Krishna. So Krishna represents the divine intellect, the intellect with the right knowledge. So when the intellect with the right knowledge is given charge of the chariot, that's what Arjuna has said. He says, you have my chariot. You know, even in Hindi, there is a famous saying, Meri Dori Tere Haath, Jahan Le Jana Hai Le Jao. So my reins are in your hand, O Lord, you take me wherever. Or my boat is, you are my boatman. You know, you take me everywhere. So when the wise intellect controlling the mind directs the sense organs, then the horse goes in the right direction, or the body goes in the right direction. But at this moment, the Arjuna, the Jiva, the individual, the perceiver, feeler, and thinker is totally disillusioned. He is not listening to the advice of his intellect, the Lord himself. His mind is shattered, his horses are going in all directions, and his organs of action are useless. He has dropped his bow and arrow. You know, we have five organs of action, five sense organs and five organs of action, the speech, hands, feet, genital and excretory organs. So my organs of action, which should be under the control of my intellect, doing the right thing, speaking the right thing, acting in the right way, I'm letting my sense organs and my mind take over and let me go out of control. And that is when the person falls apart. But if you listen to the intellect, the wise intellect, which is getting knowledge from the Lord, then that same intellect, when it is guiding my mind, holding the reins and controlling the horses and taking me in the right direction. So that's why the symbolism of this chariot is very important, that I am the chariot, this body is the chariot, I am the jiva, and I have to let the Lord take me instead of me deciding where to go. So, and where does the Lord speak? The Lord doesn't come and speak to us. He speaks to us through the scriptures. So reading the Bible, the Gita, the Quran, and all those wonderful scriptures, the Guru Granth Sahib, wherever you can get this knowledge from the Guru and from the teacher, from the Lord. So that is the beauty of this particular text, that it is taught to Arjuna. See, a lot of the Upanishads were taught in the forest or under the bank of the river, you know, these ashrams, these missions were set up on very, very peaceful grounds, either in the forest or alongside the river, in a very calm atmosphere where the student would go and would sit there and, you know, spend months and years learning from the teacher. Here it's not that. Here the student is stressed, he's agitated, a war is about to begin. And that's why this is so practical to all of us, because we cannot, you know, go to the teacher like that. So here the teacher is giving us this knowledge right in them. And we are also constantly in a battle. As we said, we are dealing with the world, and there are problems and there are conflicts, and the world is not easy. So we also, that's why this knowledge is very useful. And that's how the Lord talks to us. So constant reading of the scriptures and constant application of this knowledge. So now just a brief talk about Krishna avatar. This Swami Chinmayananda ji has written an article. I had read that. It was very powerful, about the glory of Krishna. So he's smiling. You know, even in this situation where there is a war breaking out and this person is depressed, he's very calm, he's very cool, he's very peaceful. And it is said that Krishna never in any picture or anywhere, it is ever mentioned anywhere in the Bhagavad or anywhere in the story of the Krishna that he was crying. Never. And if you look at his life, I mean, it's so tragic right from birth. Even before birth, he was responsible for the death of seven of his siblings. See, seven of his siblings die because Krishna is to be born. Those who don't know the story, Krishna's mother and father were about to get married. Of course, they didn't have any children at that time. And her brother was Kansa, who was the very evil king, but he loved his sister Devaki, and you know, like anything. And he was taking her and her husband, just newly married, like the doli, you know, they take the... And so he was taking his sister and brother-in-law to their house. And he hears the Akashvani, he hears the prophecy from the sky. He says, "Oh, evil Kansa, your sister whom you are taking, her eighth child will kill you." So this is what he hears. And I don't know why that prophecy came, but the noise. And so, or he probably had that intuition. You know, he probably heard it in his intuition. I'm sure God was not telling him, but he somehow got this. Maybe he was also, in some ways, you know, very powerful. He might have done tapas and all that. He might have done a lot of penance. So he hears that this girl's eighth child will kill you. He says, and you know how people, we don't want to die. So he says, "I'm going to just kill her. I'll just kill her. Once she's dead, where is she going to have eight children? So I'll be safe." So then her husband says, "I promise you one thing. You don't have to kill her, but keep us in your prison. Now you have safe prisons, right?" He says, "Yeah, keep us in the worst prison, the dungeon, where there are keep guards and chains and bedis and all that, and make sure we don't escape." Okay, yeah, that makes sense. Then, of course, and he says, "Also, I promise every child that is born, I'll give it to you." And so seven children are born to them in that prison, and he kills all seven children at birth. How cruel, evil he was. How much he wanted to protect his life. So Krishna, even before he's born, is responsible for the death of seven of his siblings. Can you imagine how sad? And then the moment he's born, he has to leave his parents because his father takes him to Gokul on his head and brings the girl from there. There was a girl child who was born. And it is said that when Krishna was born, all the guards went to sleep and their the chains and shackles all opened up and the locks spontaneously opened. And so Vasudeva, even in the rain, was able to take his baby boy to Nand and Yashoda in Gokul, and he brings their baby girl. And then in the morning when Kansa hears the sound of when the guards hear the sound of, and then when the baby girl comes, then the locks are all closed and everything automatically happens, and the guards wake up and they hear the girl crying. So they go tell Kansa, "Oh, this baby girl born." He says, "Girl? How can girl kill me? This is the eighth child." He says, "Yeah." So he comes and he used to hit them on the stone on their head and break. And when he tries to do that, she slips out of his grasp. And she was actually the mother goddess. And she says, "Oh, you fool. You think you can kill that? The one whom you have tried to kill is already out of the prison." And she flies away. So then he's very scared. So think about it. He has to leave his parents. He is responsible for death of seven siblings. Then he goes to his adopted parents, and there Kansa finds out where he is, and he sends all kinds of demons. And from childhood, from a baby, Krishna has to fight the demons. So what kind of life he has had so far? Nothing pleasant, right? Nothing fun. He has to fight demons and he has to live with his adopted parents. And then, of course, he was able to slay all the demons. So he has had a stressful life, but he's always smiling. And then he makes his life there for 11 years and 55 days. He lives in with the gopis and he plays the flute. And that's when he does the Ras Leela, which is the beautiful dance of the Lord with the souls. So the Supreme Lord with all the individuals. And then at that time, he has to leave that also. Even that adopted parents, he has to leave. And it is said after that, he never played the flute because the flute was only played for that Ras Leela, for that special. So he has to leave his adopted parents. He had left his original parents, and then he has to go fight the war against Kansa, the evil, his evil uncle. And there's a great battle, and he defeats them. He and Balaram, his brother, older brother, they go and they defeat Kansa and his evil demons. And he then doesn't take the kingdom himself. He makes Kansa's father, Rudrasen, the king of that kingdom. And then he goes and later on establishes a kingdom in Dwarka. He has children, and his children are useless. As often happens, you know, great people, the children are totally worthless. Even same thing with Mahatma Gandhi. His grandson was good, Raj Mohan Gandhi, but his children were, none of them were interested in doing anything. So his children are useless. So again, he has that stress, you know, when a parent and children are useless, that's another stressful situation. And then he becomes friends with Arjuna, and then he goes with Arjuna, undergoes all that. He sees how Arjuna is suffering and going to the forest for 13 years. They are being poisoned, they are being burned to death. So he has to go through all that. Then he has to witness this Mahabharata war, where, you know, thousands were killed on both sides, and tremendous sorrow. He has to undergo all that. And then, even this is not over yet. So then he, after the war is over, he goes to Gandhari, the mother of the Kauravas, 100. She had 100 sons, and she was the mother. And because her husband was blind, she also had put on a blindfold. So she had that much tapas, that much penance she had done for her. And so Krishna goes and bows down to her because of she's senior, and he touches her feet. And she says, "Who is it?" So he says, "It's I, Krishna." So he says, "You are responsible for killing my 100 sons." Now Krishna had not killed, Bhima had actually physically killed all 100 of them. But he says, "You are the one. If you had not been there, Arjuna would not have fought, and my children would still be alive." So she curses him. She says, "May you also suffer a horrible death, and may your whole family be destroyed." That's how much she, and she had that much tapas because she had not seen for so many years. And Krishna says, "Thank you very much. I wanted that because my family is not good. My children and their children are not living a good life." And he's so happy. He says, "This is the best curse. And you're telling me, may I die a horrible death? That's good. At least now I know how I'm going to leave the earth." Because he knew he was the Supreme Lord. And so his children and grandchildren fight with each other, and the entire Yadu dynasty is destroyed. He has no children, no family left. So her curse comes true. And he himself, how does he die? He's lying in a meadow, in a forest, and his feet look reddish like a deer. And so a hunter, his name was Jara, he comes and shoots an arrow at the foot of the Lord. And the Lord, that was the foot was where his weakness was, in the heel. And he shoots him, and then he suddenly groans, and he says, "Oh, I'm so sorry." He comes and he prostrates. He says, "I'm so sorry, I shot you." And Krishna said, "Thank you very much, because it's my time to go." I think he lived for 134 years or something. And so he then leaves the... So the point is that this Krishna had never had happy moments in his life. Constantly conflict and problems, and starting from his birth to his death, to his children, ancestors, his grand... Everybody, he had constant problems, and yet he was always smiling. No matter what situations came, the smile never left his face. So what we can learn from that is that in life, our problems are so little compared to his problems. Think about it, what kind of problems he has. The reason of course, all of us know his life, but I was trying to highlight his sorrows, and that's what Gurudev has done in that particular article in Krishna Avatar. I think if you have a chance, you should read it, about the glory of Krishna. So the point is that in life, we are all going to have problems. Nobody's life is perfect, and nobody's life is free of sorrow. But do you let the problems overcome you, or do you rise above the problem? You can say, "Well, he was the Lord," but that's not the point. Even whether he was the Lord or not, when he was occupying a human body, he has to work under human limitations. He has the human body, he has the human mind, he has the human intellect, he has all those emotions, he has all those situations. But he was able to go through joy and sorrow, heat and cold. Even later on he says, "Matras parshastu kaunteya, shitoshna sukha dukha daha, Agamapaino Nityaha Tantitikshasva Bharata. We will be coming to that in a few verses in the second chapter. He says that the sense objects, Matra Sparshastu, O Arjuna, she will give you heat and cold, joy and sorrow, success and failure. But how do you overcome them? Agama apaino anityaha. These are temporary. No matter how many sorrows I have, they are temporary. No matter how much joy I have, that is also temporary. So if I am ready to, if I do not want joy, then I should also be ready to lose joy and sorrow. Joy is here, will go. Sorrow is here, will go. Anityaha and tantitikshasva. Be forbearance. Have forbearance, develop forbearance so that joy and sorrow will come, but I am unaffected. And how do you do that? He will teach us in the second chapter and in the subsequent verses how to withstand no matter what the world throws at us. If you have the Lord with you and if you have the right knowledge, you can withstand that. So that was the beauty of this verse. Prahasannivar, he is smiling. He says, he knows this war is also temporary. This death of these people is temporary because the bodies are going to die. See, the moment your day of birth is written, your day of death is already there. If you are born, you are bound to die. So what is there to cry about? And that is, he will teach us, of course, in the few verses. Actually, the second chapter is very, very powerful because it teaches us about our duty from all levels, from the highest level to the worldly level, to the ego level, everywhere he hammers us. So the upcoming verses, and the next verse especially is Ashocha Van Anmashochastvam Prajna. I'll maybe just do the meaning of this verse because it's so extensive that I didn't want to cover it today. It will take me at least half an hour or so to cover it. Actually, Gurudev in his book, if you show me that book, in the commentary, he has written about four or five pages, Ashocha Van, that's verse number 11. So I would recommend you all read it before you come, the verse number 11, because that's what we'll do next week. But today I'll just do the meaning of the verse so that you know the meaning, and then please read it. And when you come next week, if you don't have these books, I would recommend you buy that. It's only $27. And as I've said before, we'll be using it for 10 years. So $2.70 per year, I'm sure every one of us can spend. So please get this book and please read it, because then only this knowledge will stay with you. So we'll just do the verse and I'll give you the meaning, and then we'll go into more detail about it next week. So verse number 11. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha. Ashochyan Anvashochastvam. Prajñāvādāṁśca bhāṣase gatāsūna gatāsūṁśca nānu śocanti paṇḍitāḥ. So Śrī Bhagavān uvāc, the Lord said, Ashochyavan Anvashochastvam. Ashochastvam means you are grieving over what? Ashochyavan, that should not be grieved over. So what do you mean not be grieved over? Thousands of people will die. Yes, this should not be grieved upon. There is no grief at all in this situation, but you are speaking like a wise person. Prajna Vadamscha Bhashase. Because remember, Arjuna in the entire first chapter was telling him how society will be destroyed and how the men will be killed and how the women will be left and the children will become orphans and then the women will be corrupted and they will be polluted and society will go down and our ancestors will not get their, you know, Shraddha, that's how we remember and all that, and then we will be committing sin. So he is giving all this discourse to the Lord. And he says, Prajna Vadamscha Bhashase, you are speaking like a wise person. He says, why should I not grieve? Why should I not grieve over death? He says, there are two kinds of individuals in this world, Gatasun and Agatasun. Sun means pranas, sun means breath. So gata soon means one whose breath is gone. So who is whose breath is gone? One who is dead. So gata soon is one who is dead, and who the rest of us are agata soon, not yet dead. That's the only difference, right? One is under the ground and one I am headed there. I will get there sooner. I am not yet in the ground, but maybe in 5, 10, 15, 20 years, either I'll be in the ground or in a funeral pyre getting burnt. So the point is that either we are dead or not yet dead. That's the only difference. But everybody is destined to die. So na anushochanti panditaha, and pandita means a wise person. You claim to be wise, you should not grieve continuously. Anu is a very important word. We'll talk about that more. One is shochanti, means one grieve. Anu means continuously, repeatedly grieving. So that should not be done. So this is the verse. Well, of course, there's a lot of commentary. It's about, I think it may take me about half an hour, but I'll try my best. The next few verses are talking at the highest level. It's actually the Upanishads, right, brought down to us in the three, four, five, six verses. Very difficult. Na sato vidyate bhava and all this. Very hard. So I'll try, and I do listen to Gurudev and other commentaries. So I'll try my best to convey that. So these are very nice verses. And then after that, the Lord will come down. First, he will talk to him at the highest level. Then he will come down at the society level. Then at the individual level. And then even at his own ego level. You know, so he handles him at every level. So it's very, very beautiful verses coming up. So that is the next one, where it says, do not grieve over what should not be grieved over, because the death of everybody is certain. And what does he mean by anushochanti? Do not continuously grieve. We'll talk next week. So because somebody says, oh, my mother passes away, you mean I should not grieve? Yeah, but move on. You know, grief is there, but it should be temporary. So that we'll talk about that in more detail next week. Any questions, any comments? Yes.
Isn't Krishna was not suffering because he was playing a spectator role?
Yes.
He's just observing, he's not involved in the situation or whatever suffering is coming. The pain is coming, he's not suffering because it's his choice to suffer or not.
Right.
Because of his spectator role.
Exactly. He was like playing the role of a spectator. Yeah. Thank you. That's good. Yeah. Pankaj. Okay.
So, in the curse of Nandhari came through, all these guys started fighting. Satyaki and Kirti Varma. So, Prajimna was there, and he went to stop him, and then he got killed. So, the Lord allowed himself, his son, to get killed himself.
Right.
So, he let himself, his son, get killed himself. So, the point was that the curse of the mother Nandhari had to come through.
Yes.
So, he didn't interfere, it had to.
Right. Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I had forgotten. That's good. We have a couple of minutes. Any other points, not only maybe not related to this, anything else I can try? Yes.
Maybe it's a silly question. I'm just wondering, Gandhari had 100 sons, right? How is it possible practically?
I also was thinking, but we just have to accept it. Maybe she lived for a long time. Maybe she had multiple twins and triplets and quintuplets and six. Maybe she had multiple. And in those days, people used to live much longer also. They would live 100 years, 120, 30 years. So.
Even if she is living 100 years.
And if she's having six at a time, 16 pregnancies.
I don't think it was.
Oh, it was cloning. Okay.
Was born last
year. Like, what is there a phone off? Turn it off, please. Acha, that was cloning. Okay. So just turn the phone off. Yeah. Yeah, so.
Hello. Are you in that class much?
Yeah, in the
class over, not teacher.
Okay, any other question? Off kar dijiye phone. Yeah, turn it off. Off.
Off kiya.
Acha, off. Any other questions? Yeah, please turn off the phones when you come to the class. It's disturbing. Any other questions? Any other comments? Okay, so we have an upcoming visit by Swami Ishwarananda Ji. It's a very, very wonderful opportunity. And this time he's doing a very different format. Instead of lectures, it's going to be a workshop. And Swami Ji himself has written a book called The Life of I. I means the ego. So what is the life of the ego? And there is this hero who is confused like Arjuna, and he meets four people who teach him at different levels. One is at the level of service, so the karma yoga. One is at the level of bhakti, love for God. One is at the knowledge level, and then the spiritual level. So at four levels, this confused individual is taught by four different teachers. It's a very, very nice book. Very reading, very good reading, because it's like a story. It's not, the teaching is very just put in here and there. So Swamiji is going to do actually workshop where each day he will do. It's a very, very interactive, very nice. We attended that workshop when we went to Mexico, to Cabo with Swamiji. So this time it's going to be a different. It's not going to be discourses. So please come, and it will be from 25 to 29th. 25, 26, 27, 28, 29, 5 days. Tuesday. Actually, it's Tuesday to Thursday. Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Monday he's coming, maybe Monday evening. Please check the flyer. I think it's Monday evening to Friday evening. 5 nights he's doing. And it'll be an interactive workshop. Very interesting. So please mark your calendar and attend. That is the last week of September, and it's a very nice book. It will be worth reading. You can buy the book in the office, or it will be available during the workshop. And I think that's all. That's the only upcoming event. We do have Navratri from 21st to 29th. They will be announcing in the hall also, where they will be doing Vishnu Sahasranama, Lalita Sahasranama, the chanting of the mother goddess, the thousand names. And even if you don't know the names, just sitting and listening to the chanting is very beautiful, how the ladies do it. So Lalita is the mother goddess, so it's the chanting of her thousand names. And that will be 21st to 29th. So please attend that. You can come, it will be in the evening. It's also on the board, the timings and everything. So anything else? Otherwise, we'll see you next Sunday. Thank you, Hari Om. Just end with a closing prayer. Om Sarve Bhavantu Sukhinah, Sarve Santu Niramayah, Sarve Bhadrani Pashyantu, Ma Kashchit Dukkha Bhag Bhavet. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namah. Hari Om.